Today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at theqfilmcast.net. Just click the link in the upper right-hand corner and choose from over 150,000 titles for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's Audible.com.
Q.
Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. That's right.
Yeah, I like that. Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger Studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're listening online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks for tuning in. If it's our first time together, let me tell you what we do. We're the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week, Jolly Roger Studio, where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That, along with our weekly top three list, inspired by the movie in question. And this week we have our orders from Commander Hoodie.
Oh, yeah.
I think I have a bit of a tradition going, don't
yeah,
I?
It's yeah. going to be that.
Yes, we do. We do have our orders, and that is to talk about the much-loved classic from 1964, Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Yeah, there you go.
Rogers.
Not on the air. From director Stanley
Don't
Kubrick.
Don't ever love me.
From director Stanley Kubrick. Yeah, it may be a satire. It may be a satire, but we ain't joking. We're going to fly this show in so low, we'll be frying chickens in the barnyard. Whoa. That's right.
Right.
You did that really well.
Yeah,
you think so?
Best Slim Pickens over here.
Oh, it stars Slim Pickens, by the way, too. Yeah, so if you're curious, keep listening to see what we call it or how we rate it. And if you haven't seen it yourself, perhaps you'll end up wanting to queue this one up yourself. So
yeah,
that's the way this game is played. Once again, I'm Michael, along with, as always, James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
I'm doing okay, you know. No nuclear fallout.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Nuclear fallout's bad.
Got all your precious bodily fluids?
I was getting to that. Not all of them.
Right.
Not as many as I had like a couple hours ago.
Okay.
Don't know what that means. God, that sounded terrible.
Awful.
But you know what doesn't sound awful?
What's
is
that?
Saying these words every week, and that is Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear. He's to your left.
Hey. Hi.
He sits right there. Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Let me turn the table on you. How are you doing today?
Yeah. Hi.
Good enough. Yeah.
You're doing high?
High.
Max Gumbo Johnson. Emphasis on gumbo. What's going on? The bearded one. What's up?
Just Dunkashan.
I recall okay. Central Park in fall.
Right.
Hey, it's ironic. You know, we're talking about bombs. We're right. talking about disasters.
But not German bombs.
Bombs and disasters. That brings us to our producer.
Oh.
Adam the Bomb Rogers. I get a nod.
Stop worrying.
Yeah.
Start to love it.
Stop worrying and just love me.
No, not going to do that. I'll appreciate you at best. I do love you, man. It's fine. We'll leave it there.
Fair enough.
How do you keep up with us? Here's how. Any way you want. That's it. Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube. I recommend you go to our website, theqfilmcast.net. That's right. Go there. Tell us how we're doing. We like feedback. Let us know what you think of this show or any other show that we've reviewed. So that's that. Qfilmcast.net. All right, guys, let's go. Let's get into this thing. Let's cue up the conversation. And we're talking about Dr. Strangelove, 1964.
1964.
Damn. 1964. Max, were you around in 1964?
Not in the physical plane.
No, I think you're not in the physical plane. Right. In the existential plane.
Right, right.
That was a thought.
Yeah.
A glimmer in his father's eye.
You were
That's right.
We all start out as a casual glimmer, I think, right. don't we?
It would be another 7 years till this earth was blessed with my birth.
Just tell me when the bomb's going to go off.
1971.
1970. Was that when it was?
Oh, yep.
You're so dated.
The bomb's about to go off now. Keep going. Come on.
Let's do this. This thing was written by Stanley Kubrick. Terry Southern. Anybody know who he is?
Nope.
It was written by Terry Southern. I mean, Kubrick kind of did a rewrite on some of the screenplay stuff. Right.
Look at that. Big brain on Savage. Yeah. You're right. Well, it came up. Written by Stanley Kubrick and Terry Southern.
Yeah.
Is he Southern? Where's he from? He is, actually.
Yeah. I actually think he's English.
Well, there goes, my theory.
Born in Texas.
Texas, that's what I was going to say. He actually wrote Easy Rider and Barbarella.
Get at it.
Whoa, team. One good movie and
wait,
another movie.
The same guy wrote Barbarella and Easy Rider?
That's awesome.
Yeah. And Casino Royale.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The Woody Allen version.
Just blew my mind. That doesn't even make sense.
I've never seen Barbarella Easy
Dennis
Rider.
Dennis Hopper wrote Easy Rider.
Hoodie's got some homework.
Go ahead and do your homework. This thing was directed by Stanley Kubrick. Need any kind of introduction there?
No. We know who Stanley Kubrick
is. No. Don't.
No. We'll stay.
Right.
Yeah, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Stars. Peter Sellers.
Right.
George C. Scott, Sterling Hayden. Second week in a row we've talked about him. You know who he was?
Sterling Hayden?
He was McCluskey in The Godfather. Broke Michael's jaw. That's him.
Yeah, it was.
What's the irony? Weird. 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, it was.
That's crazy.
Keenan Ivory Wayans. No, I'm sorry.
No, what?
No, I'm sorry. Keenan Wynn. Yeah.
Yeah.
James Earl Jones.
That was like his first movie.
First actual on-screen. He did some like voiceover stuff, I think, before this, obviously.
Yeah, after Vader.
That's come a great on. Voice. Tracy Reed. She's the only female.
There was only one female.
Man, that was a great scene. Okay. Inspired our top three, as they all do. This film inspired our top three. We kicked it around. Why not? Top three movie presidents. Memorable movie presidents.
Sure.
Just presidents that we want to put in any kind of category, I guess. I'm going to say memorable movie presidents.
That sounds good to me.
That's your favorite movie presidents.
Hopefully, your favorite ones are the ones you remember, Max.
They are the ones I remember.
Yeah, they're his favorite.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's get into ratings. Let's talk about that. Let's tell you what IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes came down with on this thing. And then we'll get into ours. We'll play a trailer and get back with our reviews.
Sure.
IMDb, it's nuclear. It's atomic. It's 8.6. What do you think of that, Hoodie?
Yeah, there you go. Wow.
It's what it is.
It's a number.
That's a mushroom cloud land response there. Rotten Tomatoes. You 100%. Ready for this? 100%.
100%. Wow, that's a bigger number.
Have we ever had that?
I think what?
Wake and Fright.
Wake and Fright was 100%.
How many people actually voted on that
one? A lot.
That's about 70, I think.
Okay, maybe not. But a lot.
Well, 70. That's
not bad.
I mean, 100% anything. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a portobello mushroom.
There you go. Users at 94. This thing has some love, right?
Yeah.
94 and 100. It's okay.
Strange.
Very revered.
What do you think of that, producer? 94 for the users.
Why would I think anything different than what they said?
Oh, the drama.
Cloaked in danger.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this thing. I'll tell you what we got here. We'll go through a synopsis. We're going to play a trailer. We'll come back after that. Here's what you have. In 1964, with the Cuban Missile Crisis fresh in viewers' minds and the hydrogen bomb relatively new and frightening, Stanley Kubrick dared to make a film about what could happen if the wrong person pushed the wrong button. Dr. Strangelove's jet black satire and a host of superb comic performances, including three from Peter Sellers, have kept this film fresh and entertaining, even as its issues have become slightly less timely. Loaded with thermonuclear weapons and a U.S. bomber pilot by... a U.S. bomber piloted by Major T.J. King Kong is on a routine flight near the Soviet Union when they receive orders to commence Wing Attack Plan R. Best summarized by Major Kong is nuclear combat toe-to-toe with the Ruskies.
That's it.
That is it. And on the ground, Burleson Air Force Base Group Captain Lionel Mandrake, once again by Peter Sellers, notices nothing in the news about America being at war. General, ironically, Jack D. Ripper, calmly informs him that he gave the command to attack the Soviet Union because it was high time someone did something about fluoridation, which is sapping America's body fluids, and apparently has something to do with Ripper's sexual dysfunction. However, the ante is up considerably when Soviet Ambassador Desadesky. I'm sorry about that. informs Mulphy and his staff that the latest innovation in Soviet weaponry technology, a doomsday machine that will destroy the entire world if Russians are attacked, could possibly be detonated. That took some time. Okay, someone pour me a glass of grain alcohol and rainwater.
We need to replenish some fluids.
You guys listen to this.
Blast off! Where's my shorts?
I shouldn't tell you this, Mandrake, but you're a good officer and you have a right to know. It looks like we're in a shooting war.
The hell. All the Russians are Bobs.
Well, boys, I reckon this is it. Nuclear combat toe-to-toe with the Ruskies.
I first became aware of it, Mandrake, during the physical act of love.
Has that plane really got a chance of getting through?
Well, sir, if the pilot's good, see? I mean, if he's really sharp, he can barrel that baby in solo. You ought to see it sometime. It's a sight. A big plane, like a 52 room. It's jet exhaust frying chickens in the barnyard.
Dr. Strangelove.
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and...
Love the bomb.
A moving picture.
Love that bomb.
So there it is, the 1964 classic satire, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. That was a trailer. You know what I was doing during that trailer?
No.
I went over to the producer's pockets and looked in his pockets. You know what I found?
What'd you find?
I found one .45 caliber automatic, two boxes of ammunition, 4 days concentrated emergency rations, one drug issue containing antibiotics,
morphine, vitamin pills, pep pills, sleeping pills, tranquilizer pills.
One miniature combination Russian phrase book and Bible, $100 in ruble, $100 in gold, 9 packets of chewing gum, 1 issue of prophylactics, 3 lipsticks, 3 pairs of nylon stockings.
And after that, you found me very happy.
Boy, I felt like I'd have a good time in Nashville with all that stuff.
Right.
So there it is. Dr. Strangelove, that's what we're talking about. Right. Okay.
We're on the plane.
Yeah, we're on the plane. Right. Let's get into a little bit of did you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of did you knows on this film.
There's almost too many. Did you know that there's almost too many did you knows?
I did know that.
I did know that.
Right. Let's get into a few of them, then we'll get into our reviews.
I could feel the whole show.
Exactly.
Jeez, you could do like a box set. Like a special Blu-ray edition or something.
Like a black box set.
Well, let's get into a few of these because most of them are interesting, too.
Sure.
Yeah. A lot more.
Here's a few that I wrote down. If you want to jump in with a few, go ahead. Did you know that in one version of the script, aliens from outer space observed all the action?
I did.
Yep.
I did not know that, but I learned that.
Do you think that would have been better?
No.
Yeah. No.
No, it would have been overkill. Did you know Peter Sellers was paid $1,055,000 of the film's budget? Stanley Kubrick famously quipped, "I've got 3 for the price of 6."
$1 million.
$1 million. Peter Sellers improvised most of his lines and was also the first actor to be nominated for a single Academy Award for a film in which he portrayed 3 different characters in the same film.
Which character?
Yeah.
All of them. Yeah, it's a combination.
I thought he was only played 1 character.
Stop. I feel sorry for you if you didn't get that part, man. Anybody. The film led to actual changes in policy to ensure that the events depicted could never really
happen. No, that really happened, yeah.
That actually scares me more than the film.
Yeah. Right. The fact that it could have happened before.
Yeah, that someone sat around and watched this movie and said, "Hey, Bill, we need to think about this."
It's the classic thing, art imitates life.
You know what scene it was that made them change their policy? When he had to go to the payphone to call the president. They said, "Whoa, this is not good. What if somebody actually has to do that? We really need to fix that." Speaking of phones.
Wow, the irony.
Really?
Did that just really happen?
Operator, this is Group Captain Lionel Mandrake. I'm speaking from Burfelson Air Force Base. Look, something very urgent has come up, and I want you to place an emergency person-to-person call with President Merkin Muffley in the Pentagon, Washington, D.C. No, I'm perfectly serious, operator. The President, yes, the President of the United States.
Okay, so we're back. Had to take a quick break.
Yeah, the red phone to the president.
The red phone to the president called. Right. Apparently we're under attack.
Well, they're monitoring for sure.
I picked up this red phone. Yeah.
I'm calling that divine intervention of some sort. That was weird. Yeah. Talking about a payphone and a payphone ring tone from someone's cell phone goes off.
Someone nothing. Thanks, Adam.
Dropped the bomb on us.
Sorry.
We're going to talk more about that later, but that was weird. Yeah. Loved it. Did you know George C. Scott was reputedly annoyed that Stanley Kubrick was pushing him to overact his role? While he vowed never to work with Kubrick again, Scott eventually saw this as one of his favorite performances. Many fans consider it his best work on screen.
Pretty good stuff.
Pretty good stuff, yeah. Oh, this is interesting. You'll want to know this. Dr. Strangelove apparently suffers from agonistic apraxia, also known as alien hand syndrome. Adam, do you suffer from that, Bob? I bet you do. Yeah. It's caused by damage to the corpus callosum, the nerve fibers that connect the brain's 2 hemispheres. And I have one more here. Major Kong's comments about survival kit was originally, "A fella could have a pretty good weekend in Dallas with all that stuff." But Dallas was overdubbed with Vegas, and why do you think that is?
Because Kennedy got shot.
Kennedy got shot, yeah. So
that was quick, Max.
I know.
Yeah, but I guess what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas even back then. Yeah.
Real quick, the best part about the thing you said he has suffered from agnostic ataxia.
Yeah.
That was not discovered until after this movie came out. And I just heard this on the radio like 3 weeks ago, literally.
Really?
That was discovered from people that had the same symptoms, and they actually named it Dr. Strangelove syndrome.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's actually what it's called, Dr. Strangelove
syndrome. Hand Tourette's or something.
Yeah,
I don't.
It's sort of like, yeah, so it's exactly what he has in the movie. And
yeah,
they
do your own research, people.
I thought they were all just
I don't know if that's accurate.
I'm taking Max's word for it. I'm taking Gumbo's word for it.
He heard it on the radio.
Yeah, God, must be true.
I thought this film was ahead of its time. Okay. My God, that's creepy, too.
I'm going to bet you $100 it's true.
Did you know this was Gene Siskel's all-time favorite film?
I thought it was Saturday Night Fever.
Well, IMDb doesn't lie, I guess. Maybe it did this time.
All right.
Listen, every film, we don't use stars here. Thumbs up, thumbs down is stupid.
It's dumb.
Yeah, we let the film tell us how we're going to rate it. And today, we are rating this film. Max, what is it?
Somebody. Precious bodily fluids.
Precious bodily fluids.
Precious bodily fluids.
Some are more precious than others, but let's just keep it right there.
That's your opinion.
Let's get into ratings. And what we usually do is go to the man that queued it up. This is a Matt St. Hoodie film. You got to jump in first.
Sure thing. Ratings.
We'll be your wingman. You go ahead. 1 to 10 precious bodily fluids. How many are you squirting out?
Or oozing.
Jeez, guys. So I'm going to give it a 7.
All right. 7 precious bodily fluids.
Which is way higher than I thought that I was ever going to give it. I really queued this up because I didn't like this movie and I wanted to know why everybody did. But
hey, sometimes it takes a second.
We'll get there.
Second viewing. Third viewing.
Like 12, but go ahead.
Let's go over to James Hart Subsavage to your right. Counterclockwise, man. How many are you squirting out here?
I see where Hoodie's going, but I got to go a little lower. I got to go 6.
6.
Yeah.
Precious.
It's above average.
We have some places to go. What about you, Bomb? Adam, the producer, the bomb, talking about the bomb of...
No worries.
Yeah, the bomb of no worries. Thanks for bailing me out there.
Bomb's a good word to put this. 3.
3. Okay.
What a shock.
Were you so bored?
No, I wouldn't say bored. Just okay, more like
enough of that.
Mildly
uninterested.
Yeah.
Okay.
Max Gumbo Johnson. To you I go. What is it?
8 bodily fluids. 8 precious bodily fluids. Yeah.
Okay.
I liked it a lot more this time than I did
really.
The previous time I watched it.
This is a film
it's
to
one
me.
One that grows on you.
Yeah, it definitely does. This is one to me that's been crossing my radar. Interesting. Ironic, yeah. A long time. I've seen a lot of several Kubrick films. This is one I've always wanted to get to. This is 10. This is 10. I will remember the day when I first saw this film. I got up and walked around my house, couldn't sit down. For an hour after I watched this.
And this is the first time you saw it.
This is one of the best movies I have ever seen.
How does this happen? How does this keep happening?
This is satire gone crazy, gone perfectly. It is a payload of perfection.
Wow.
Wow.
This is a 10, I say. Yes.
You're not alone in that opinion, sir.
I'm absolutely mesmerized by this film. This is one of the best films I've ever seen. Give me 10.
34.
All right, so let's go kick it around again. Let's go kick it right back to where
we started. Are there that many bodily fluids, 34? Probably.
Listen,
there certainly are, yes.
The only reason I gave it 10 is because that's when I ran out of them.
Oh, man.
I was about that excited after this
Oh,
film,
my God.
Too,
let's keep moving. Okay. Let's keep moving.
Sorry. You can do what you want to with that hoodie. Let's go back to you. Yeah, you gave it a 7. Go. Why?
Well, I had seen this. Before I decided that we should all watch this together, I had never actually watched this movie all the way through because I got bored with it. I didn't get it. I ended up turning it off where I would, you know, catch it halfway through and watch it. So I've seen the whole thing, but I hadn't seen it all from beginning to end. And I didn't get why this was known as Kubrick's most brilliant film at all. So when I, you know, recommended this last week, I was thinking I would probably hate it and give it a 4. And then I watched it again right, you know, pretty close after that, and I turned it off. I couldn't get through it. Yeah.
But you're a big fan of Kubrick.
Yeah, I love Kubrick. Yeah. That's why this has bothered me, because I should really I should have given this a 10. So, you know, I went back and decided to read a whole bunch up on it and then watch it again. And then I started putting all the pieces together that are very obviously in there to get. I don't know why I wasn't picking up what he was putting down. But, yeah, I should have got all this, but I just didn't. I don't know if I was just looking for something too hard. I don't know what happened, but yeah, I landed on about a 7. It's not my favorite movie, but for the time and place it was done, it's pretty good.
And we'll get into did it hold up from 64. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time
ago. And you know, Peter Sellers was regarded as one of the world's finest comedic performers at that time. Yeah. And this was going to showcase that, and we'll talk about if that happened. Max, actually went over to James. Let's go to James next.
Yeah. 6. It's I got to say, I love the opening credits. Love the opening credits. It's been a long time since I've seen it, and I remember loving it. I remember liking this film a great deal. And from the opening scene where there's the great font even yeah, back there, the font so of the strange. Credit yeah. and the suggested coitus of mm-hmm. love and war yep. from the bombers fueling.
You yeah, know, see, that's the stuff yeah. that I didn't get the first time.
Yeah,
it's, all
yeah.
that stuff.
It's yeah. very phallic, and you know, it's like, okay, yeah. I'm on board with this. I'm about to be in love with this. But when I was watching it, it started to feel like a movie out of time, mm. not to be confused with Timeless. The Cold War subject matter, especially a satire, for me, it seemed to fall flat. There was no immediacy to it. You can make a war movie, even if it's not your time or it's not your remembrance. You can make a Civil War movie where there's the immediacy of the action, what has to happen. You can make a Vietnam movie where the immediacy that has to happen. And in the Cold War, there are many movies made of Cold War. I mean, Max was telling us last night, this is a whole genre, the Cold War film. This fell flat, and I think it was because he was trying for laughs. Mm. It was trying for the satire.
Yeah.
But satire and parody is a fine line, and you either play it straight and hope that people get the joke, or you play it camp and force people to get the joke. And I just think, for me, this didn't go either way strong enough. Mm. And so it almost felt like a straightforward narrative. But as a straightforward narrative, it didn't have the immediacy that I needed it. Now, as film craft, it's a brilliant film.
Darn right.
When you judge something like film craft versus a movie, it holds up. I mean, it's Kubrick, as a filmmaker, makes good films. But as a movie, as a piece of entertainment,
yeah.
I think for our generation now, mm-hmm. falls flat. I think
okay.
because we're removed from that immediacy, that scare.
Yeah. And that played out in the middle of all this lunacy, too, at just the right time for me.
Yeah.
It never lost its edge and went complete satire or fell off into not satire, you're scaring me. It rode that edge for me. There were moments in this film where all of a sudden I went from laughing to almost straight-faced a minute going, okay, I'm thinking about things that are taking me out of the satire. I'm thinking about some pretty heavy things all of a sudden.
Right.
In the middle of this, and it took me there, and that's what I appreciated. So you really liked the parts, but you didn't necessarily, it didn't grab you and enthrall you like it did me with how these parts were put together.
No, not as the story okay. should.
All right.
Of something so okay. like immediate as thermonuclear devastation of okay. the entire planet. Yeah.
Well, let's get back to that. We'll get into some yeah. of the scenes, too. We'll have plenty of time to get yeah. into that. And we're talking about Strangelove. Dr. Strangelove, 1964. Producer, I think you came up next, didn't you? You gave it
three.
You're trickling in with a three.
Bodily fluid.
And you
sweat,
are
sweat, blood, and tears.
Yeah. Which one was it? Blood, sweat, or tears? Either way, I'm crying. But tears. Go ahead, three. What tears. Do you got?
When it comes to Kubrick, Full Metal Jacket sums up everything about him to me. You have part of a movie that's great, and the other half sucks. And I love some of Kubrick's movies. Other ones suck. This one is horrible.
Okay.
I do not
That's
like
just
it.
Like your opinion, man.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But here you go. I will not down the acting in this. The acting is great. I did not find it funny. There's only mm-hmm. two scenes that were actually funny to me. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I think this would make a better drama than it would have made a satire.
Oh,
I kind of agree with you on that.
God.
I yeah, just never didn't seen like it.
This is
about,
satire.
About that.
Yeah, I'll get into my scenes later.
He even tried to love you. He tried to love you, Bomb. We're moving on. Going to Max
you know
Gumbo
he's
Johnson.
Dead
now,
Gumbo.
Right?
He's dead.
No.
Gumbo Johnson, you're up there a little bit with me. I'll get into my big love, but go ahead. Eight.
Like I said, I'd seen this several years ago, and I sort of had the same reaction Matt had. It's like, I really think I'm supposed to like this movie, but there's something that's just sort of off about it. And the same thing happened with Deer Hunter. I watched that when I
yeah,
was like,
yeah, I had that same
I watched that when I was like 18. And
you
I was
should
like,
love
I didn't
it.
Like that. But I saw it again a couple years ago. I was like, wow, that was great. That same thing happened with this one. This was a lot better
yeah.
at my age now than like when I saw it when I was 20 or whatever. It hit the mark with me this time. It was funny. I got a lot more of the jokes, I guess. I got more of the deadpan black humor, the satire element of it.
Yeah.
And it was complete. This is one of the blackest black comedies I've ever seen.
Without a doubt.
It's just, it's like a black hole. It's so black.
Yeah.
The only part that kept me from going to a 10 was, it was a pretty straightforward narrative movie. I think
yeah.
a lot of people like to read a lot, way too much into this movie.
I think so,
that's
too.
Not there.
I
it's like,
so
okay, you just watch it, and this story unfolds, and you get it. The problem with me with this movie was the beginning. I never got a clear sense of the urgency or
really?
The danger.
The Johnny Come Marching Home theme continually playing in the background.
No, I got that. I got yeah. that. But the whole setup where it almost starts off, boom, they're going to drop the bomb.
Yeah, here's the insanity.
And then you don't really get the explanation until you get some of the backstory, and it's explained later on. And by the time you get some of that, you've kind of forgotten that they didn't explain to you at the beginning. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I wish they'd rearrange that narrative just a little bit to make it a little more clear.
Okay.
That would have helped it out a lot to me.
Right.
And I think that throws a lot of people off with this movie. They start watching it, and it's like, well, hold on. I don't see what's going on here. And then you finally find out what's happening. It's like you've sort of forgotten to care.
Right. Okay, well.
And that was my one big thing. I mean, I can appreciate that.
I see what his point is. Yeah,
I can kind of understand his train of thought. It's funny because everybody has a different kind of brain. I mean, sometimes we process things different. I sat down with a cup of coffee, thought, okay, what's the big deal? Let's see what this is. I don't know, okay? This thing grabbed me. It's like a giant hand came out of 1964 and smacked the Coen brothers in the head and said, I liked Burn After Reading too, but this is how you do this. Yeah, because I kept comparing this film to that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I read somewhere there was a bit of an influence from that film to Burn After Reading. Mm-hmm. It's just that satire, and to me that's funny. Things that just walk that edge, never loses its edge, but for the whole thing it's just teetering on that perfect satire. And for me, that's just what worked here. Things that are just commonalities in conversation, but they make you laugh. They dance with you. This whole script danced with me. It never lost its footing. From the very beginning, too, when you talk about that opening credit, I'm like, okay, wait a second. Why am I immediately interested in how these words are put on the screen?
Right.
Why am I immediately glued to these mountains coming out of this fog? Who knew that that would be the perfect thing at this time? And through the entire film, and we'll go to the film craft of it. Film craft. Mastercraft.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Kubrick, you start to understand why people get their lore. And this film did it for me. I think this is his most complete bit of directing because every scene was like, how'd he know that would be perfect? How'd he know that would be perfect? Enough of that. We can get into some of that as well later. But then it's the performances. Peter Sellers, you know, I've seen Pink Panther. I didn't know he was this good.
Yeah. Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's great.
I mean, he played three completely distinct but overdone characters in their own way. They were all overdone. And you know, comedy's not easy. Actors tell you that.
Yeah.
You can be a little emotional. You can be a little sad. Mm-hmm. You can't be a little satirical. And you can't be a little funny. And to do it three times astounded me. And George C. Scott, this is his best performance. I like the wackiness of it.
Mm.
I loved his introduction, too, when he's in the can and this beautiful woman's on the
right,
bed.
Yeah.
Now, you knew that was
a good scene.
That was a good scene. And the whole time, I thought to myself, this is 1964. At that time, I'm trying to put myself in that seat, Cold War, that mentality. I would have flipped out at how needed this was in that time because I think that it undermines the whole idea that we were in control. That's what this whole thing's about. You're not in control. The people who are controlling all this, it's like a hot potato. No one wants the issue. No one has control of anything.
Right.
These are just regular people who are trying to fool one another that I got this. No,
right.
You don't. And that kind of terrified me that this whole time, no one's really in control of these things. And the idea that technology and man's stupidity are trying to coexist is a dangerous, dangerous way to go.
Well, the very fact that because they made this movie and they screened it for Congress or whatever, and they had to go back and go, oh, that's not, we didn't think about that.
That's right.
They had to change their thing.
Yeah. And, you know, there's certain things in this film that, to me, are so brilliant. Like, for example, they're sitting around this giant table. I don't want to get too many scenes, but this makes my point.
The war room.
The war room.
Yeah. And his girlfriend calls, and all of a sudden, in the middle of thermonuclear war, he's just like us. He's wanting to please his wife. I'll be home in a little bit, baby. Just make sure you say your prayers. I mean, to me, that brought this message home. And then, on top of, we're talking about film craft, and acting, one of the best scripts I've ever seen. I mean, to read this would just make me laugh. And we'll get into the scenes later, man. I can't think of anything I didn't love about this film. Literally got up and thought, I'm going to walk around the house for a while. I don't want to sit down. I love this film. Okay, so there you go. You guys want to take a break? Let's listen to a piece of Dr. Strangelove right now. We don't know what it is, but you'll like it, probably.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine. Now then, Dimitri, you know how we've always talked about the possibility of something going wrong with the bomb. The bomb, Dimitri. The hydrogen bomb. Well, now, what happened is, one of our base commanders, he had a sort of, well, he went a little funny in the head. You know, just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing. Well, I'll tell you what he did. He ordered his planes to attack your country. Well, let me finish, Dmitri. Let me finish, Dmitri. Well, listen, how do you think I feel about it? Can you imagine how I feel about it, Dmitri? Why do you think I'm calling you? Just to say hello? Of course I like to speak to you. Of course I like to say hello. Not now, but any time, Dmitri. I'm just calling up to tell you something terrible has happened. It's a friendly call. Of course it's a friendly call. Listen, if it wasn't friendly, you probably wouldn't have even got it.
Okay, so there you go. There's a piece from the film we're talking about. 1964's much-loved Dr. Strangelove, How I Stopped Worrying and Loved the Bomb. All right, so we're going to get into a little bit of a gotta talk about. Let's go over to Hoodie, man. Gotta talk about what? Oh.
We were just talking about that.
About the
phone conversation between the president and the Soviet Union, Dmitri. That was the best part of the movie. That sold it for me.
It sticks out to me.
The whole thing is, and I didn't get this the first bunch of times I watched this, that the whole thing is a sexual innuendo. Go figure. I didn't pick up on that.
The Merkin Muffley, President Merkin Muffley.
I honestly did not pick up on that. So to look at it in that light and to watch the whole movie, it's a completely different movie now. I get that now.
Explain to me, why would that be a sexual innuendo?
Oh, because it's a relationship. It's like a husband talking to a wife, and they're having like that I'm coming home to dinner. I love you more. No.
I think I've had that conversation.
we all have. That's why I think it hits home for so many people.
Oh, it's just cutting.
First.
Yeah, so Max, I'm sure he's memorized the whole thing. I'm just going to
know I haven't. It's a long speech.
It was great, though. I loved it. I thought it was great.
I left that scene wondering if world leaders in that position would really talk like that. And part of you thinks, well, would they?
The other part of you thinks, well, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Imagine if you're the president and you got to talk to some of these guys, once a week or so.
Yeah.
Well, they talk through translators.
He was just so meek when he talked. It's like, hey, what you doing?
Hi, Dmitri.
Hey, yeah, no, it's me. It's the president of the United States. I'm just checking in on you. Hey.
Yeah.
That was great. I love that scene. I love that whole scene.
You think Obama
so
and Putin
great.
Are like that?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. You never know.
I doubt it. Probably.
What do you got to talk about, Max?
Well, that scene, I'm with Matt on there. That is the best scene in the whole movie, that conversation between him and Dmitri. Two things I want to bring up. The Slim Pickens and his crew on the plane.
Yeah.
That was not played for comedy at all.
No.
Right.
Mm. At all. No. It was played completely straight. Yeah.
Well, listen,
wait a second. Like a dramatic
hilarious.
Film.
Wait a second. I'm with Adam on this. You say it wasn't played for comedy.
I read that too.
Pickens was pretty comical. As a matter of fact, he's one of the standout in-your-face kind of slapstick parts of this film.
No, you're completely wrong.
No, okay,
but,
am I wrong?
But Kubrick, I read this, that Kubrick tried to tell him to just play this, as straight-laced, as straight-faced as he could, and this is how it came off, which is... Yeah.
And that's actually how he talks.
Yeah,
that's
so amazing. Kubrick, knowing that, completely led this guy on. I think they may have given it up at the last little bit. There's no way that he could have thought it was a dramatic part if he's riding a bomb.
No, he probably was like, well, hold on, what's going on here?
But this is all a joke.
Yeah, I read a lot of this before I watched it again, too. When they hired Slim Pickens, Kubrick didn't give him the whole script. He only gave him his scenes. So Slim Pickens didn't know what went on in the rest of the movie, so he thought, okay, well, these guys are going to fly this plane over and drop a bomb on Russia.
Yeah.
This can't be a comedy. This is a drama, of course.
Right.
So he played it like a drama.
Right.
And I think one of the brilliant moves of that was that it added to the satirical nature of the film and the black comedy aspect of it. The other one, Jack D. Ripper, that whole scene in his office, with that whole sequence of scenes where he's sitting there talking to
you mean the Floridian speech and all this stuff.
It's like how did they not pick up that this guy was a complete lunatic, but he's still in charge of this entire operation?
That is kind of the whole theme of the film, is who's really in control and who are the people that are supposed to be looking out for us? Are they better than us? Really ask that question. Are they better than you? Are they smarter than you? Are they different than you? No. Nope. Sorry.
No, not really.
You can't separate the human from humanity no matter who you put in what position, okay? It was very interesting. Like, it made me think about things that I hadn't thought about.
Yeah.
I guess a satire should. I guess a good satire should. What do you think, Savage? What do you got to talk about?
I loved the Mandrake-Ripper dichotomy. I think that was the strongest relationship in the film. Mm-hmm. Peter Sellers' portrayal of Lieutenant Mandrake was his strongest performance, more than Strange Love, which almost seems like an aside character. Mm-hmm. And Muffley, the President Muffley, which...
Love that performance there.
They're brilliant performances, and they are so three different. If you didn't know they were the same actor, you wouldn't know they were the same actor. Mm-mm. And that's testament to his skill as an actor. I loved him as Mandrake, but the Mandrake character was supposed to be us, because he's the only rational one in the
film.
I
thought the same thing, too. He really was our eyes and our ears on the inside.
Right.
He's not even American.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's the point.
Yeah, there's the irony. And then prototypical British reserve, stiff upper lip, unlock these doors.
Yeah, so, very, very proper.
And then
yeah.
that one throwaway line where it's like, were you ever tortured, Mandrake? Yeah. And it's like, oh, this guy's not just this English guy. I mean, he's... Mm-hmm. He's seen his time. He's done his duty. He's
right.
done the thing. And I thought that the film craft with Sterling Hayden yes. as Jack D. Ripper,
yes.
that was some of because, the most brilliant film work
yeah.
in this film.
It really was savage. Let me tell you something. I don't know if this film would have worked. I was left the impression this wouldn't have worked with any other director. I think Kubrick just was at the right time, right place. You talk about those scenes where the camera's all of a sudden down below, right. and he's this imposing figure, yeah. almost like a face on Mount Rushmore, yeah. with a cigar hanging out.
Yeah.
You could have put the camera everywhere, anywhere.
Right.
How did this guy know to put it right there? And this thing is just continually humming along with perfect scene, perfect scene, perfect scene.
Yeah.
That's what I got out of
that. And straight and solid. And yeah. it's like not played for laughs at all.
No. No. Yeah.
I mean, with a different music, with a different score,
mm-hmm.
this would have been incredibly creepy. But mm-hmm. the score, and I read during the research of this that Kubrick used, this was his film where he tried to experiment with music.
Yeah.
As a part other than tones. I mean, he used tones before and yeah. whatever, but and then I didn't like George C. Scott.
You didn't like George
no,
C. Scott?
No, because it seemed
he was
like
great.
He it was completely hammy. There was parts where he
that was
doing
the great part.
That was what was so good about it.
The googly eyes.
The googly eyes, the chewing the gum, the kind of biting his lip, not knowing what to say next. He was so cautious about everything that came out of his mouth too.
Right.
This guy was paranoid.
Yeah. No, I understand why George C. Scott did not like how he was treated in this.
He was a small fish in a big pond.
Well,
that's the character he played. You know what I'm saying?
And
he felt like he didn't want to be there. He felt like he was going to get eaten at any time.
And one more thing, and I got to talk about, and this is a Kubrick thing. If you're a Kubrick fan, which I am a Kubrick fan, he builds sets.
Man, yeah.
All of this was set work. The mm-hmm. war room set. He built this set to light. As it would be lit.
Yes, and you know
and
what?
I
want to talk about something I got to talk about while we're right there. We'll get back to probably go over to the producer in a second. We talk about the set design, the aesthetic of those lights around that table.
Yes,
where it almost felt like it just sucked these guys into their own world. Right? It looked like they were in a petri dish of something, and we're looking at them
that's
going.
That's a good phrase.
What
for
kind
it.
Of experiment am I looking at here?
Right.
That was incredibly visually engaging to me. Yes. That war room could have just been a room. That war room became a character to me. Mm-hmm. I could feel the lights. I could feel myself getting pulled into that vortex of that circle that laid over top of that table. Once again, master screen, masterwork.
Really,
yeah.
It was shot very claustrophobic, too, because you're looking mm-hmm. through the top circle at the lower circle, and you have the big...
The funnel, yeah.
Yeah, the big screens that are actually angled down over top of them.
Triangular.
So it's very claustrophobic, and to try to visually make your way through it is kind of a maze. So you kind of automatically just from looking at it kind of...
Yeah, those visuals made you feel like humanity's going to a place that's much larger than it is. Yeah. What do you got?
I love the scenes in the war room. Everything.
Yeah.
And the great thing, one of the things I really liked about the war room, you had the president, you had George C. Scott, a couple other guys, and then you had like 17 or 20 other people, and none of them ever said a word.
They looked the exact same.
They all just stared at the puppets. President and what was his name?
Buck Turgeon.
Yeah.
Buck. Turgeon.
Yeah. And the whole thing with George C. Scott eating the gum constantly, it's like he was just a nervous wreck, and that's the only thing he could do to calm himself down. And that pratfall you talk about, that wasn't a pratfall.
I know.
He actually fell
down, and they just kept it in.
Yeah.
And somehow that worked for me. That was like a little a little exclamation point in that scene that made me go, okay.
What was great about it was he literally fell down and got up and just kept going. And I said, oh, we're just going to leave that in there because it was
that's
funny.
Fine.
Yeah, that's cool. How you can say he was the worst part of the movie that blows my mind. He was fantastic.
He really was fantastic.
It was really hammy.
He's supposed to be this macho man.
He's having a patent fallout.
He's this macho guy in the Air Force that's this,
I'm
a leader, I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that. Everything was. And then he's in a situation where he's having to answer for a lot of this stuff. I mean, you could literally see the beads of sweat just pouring off of this guy when he's sitting there chewing that gum. And just over and over, it's like he was, there were war rations. He was eating this stuff much.
Yeah, then you get the facial tics.
Then he's picking up the phone. Don't call me here. I'll be home. You're Bucky. You'll be home. You know.
don't forget to say your prayers.
And then the Russian comes in. And did he actually put him in a headlock? I think he did. He grabbed the guy when they were by the catering, the food table.
Yeah.
And the president comes up and says, you know, the famous line, this is the war room, you can't fight in here.
You can't fight in here, this is the war room.
Yeah, that's like the most famous line of the movie.
It sold it. That kicked it up a couple points for me.
And George C. Scott sold every scene, every line he was in.
I didn't know he had this in his palette.
He was perfect in that. Yeah, he was perfect in this.
I absolutely agree. You know what I kept thinking about in this film? How did these people get in these positions? How did this guy, who's obviously the president, right? This is just a guy who's just full of nepotism. He probably got there because he knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm left with, well, that's probably how it works. And then how did George C. Scott get in this position? This guy has no compass whatsoever. He's just following anybody, and we're supposed to lead a guy.
No, we're
supposed to be led by a guy who's obviously just in line to follow anybody.
Because he had that awesome book, the Estimates of Megadeth.
No. I mean,
that's what makes it still relevant today because nothing's really changed since
1960. That's what I was thinking,
George,
too.
To me, Turgeson and Jack D. Ripper come off as the two characters that were... They were the Hulks. Hey, these are lifetime military guys. And it's sort of a stereotype to say that, you know, these guys want war. But that's the role they filled in this movie. Yeah. Those guys.
You know what we need to do right now? We need to stop for just a second. Let's listen to George C. Scott. Let's listen to him ham it up. This is 1964, Dr. Strangelove.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
This clumsy fool tried to plant that ridiculous camera on me.
Yeah, you bet your sweets, Mr. Commie. Look at this, Mr. President. This lousy commie rat was taking pictures with this thing of the big board.
Mr. Ambassador. This clumsy fool attempted to plant that ridiculous camera on me.
That's a damn lie. I saw him with my own eyes.
Gentlemen, this is outrageous. I have never heard of such behavior in the war room before.
Once again, there's a piece from the 1964 film that we're talking about tonight. Dr. Strangelove, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Listen, Adam, man, you were way down the totem pole here. You come trickling in with a 3. I think you said you liked the performances, so let's keep it positive, okay?
I will stay strictly positive on this. Peter Sellers, I love him. I went to London one time and made a special trip outside of London just to see his gravesite.
Ooh.
And Bram Stoker, too. So I had to go see him.
So who did you really go see?
Yeah.
Right. All right.
Nice point.
he's absolutely brilliant in this film. You cannot... dismiss any of his acting.
Yeah,
at
you
all.
Try it.
My favorite scenes, though, are definitely the one where he is talking to Bat Guano in the phone booth, and him, the Bat Guano guy, talking about shooting the Coca-Cola machine, and that he has to answer the Coca-Cola.
You know, I thought that was funny. We're talking about
that was the best joke of the whole entire film.
We're talking about thermonuclear war, and he's saying, "Okay, but if this goes wrong, you're going to answer the Coca-Cola machine." Is that some kind of a nod to our removal from reality as far as what we were dealing with there?
Just corporate culture?
Yeah. Right, corporate culture, the whole thing, how
AT&T
bought and sold
and
we
Coca-Cola.
Are. By
Coca-Cola. Yeah.
I thought that was funny,
they
too.
They owned us even then.
That and the ending scene with Dr. Strangelove and his hand Tourette's.
Ooh, yeah, let's talk about
this.
That
was the absolute...
They said that Stanley Kubrick, who's known to be a humorless man, literally had a hard time filming that because it's the only time he's ever laughed that hard in his life. They basically told Sellers, do what you want with this. No one knew what he was going to do, and he floored people when he came out and unleashed whatever that was.
I read they literally had to reshoot that and re-edit it so much because people were laughing. There's actually
one guy was
you can see the one guy behind him laughing.
I rewound it and looked
for
that.
He's really trying hard not to really
the Russian
bust
guy.
Out. Yeah, the Russian guy, the big Russian guy.
Yeah.
The guy was a genius. He was perfect in this movie. I mean, I think everybody that was in this did some of the best stuff they've ever done in their careers. The only thing I don't get about Strangelove is... The whole movie's named after him, and he's probably one of the most minor characters in the movie.
Right.
Someone explain that to me.
Strange. Well, I think it's just because he's called Strange Love. How cool is that? I mean,
well, and the movie is a sexual innuendo, yeah, and it's a strange love.
I don't know if maybe. I don't know. All right, maybe Hoodie's onto something here. It wasn't named after the character of Strange Love. Maybe it was our strange love of war, yeah. Our strange love of power, our strange love of something.
That's it.
Maybe there's an innuendo there.
That's what I'm thinking.
All the main characters' names were sort of sexual innuendo.
Absolutely, they
Bat were. Guano? What are you into, man?
Well, no, he wasn't. But, I mean, translate his name literally. What is it?
Bat poop.
Okay, we'll use another
There's
word.
Probably a website for that,
you know,
way,
yeah. Right, that it was it's crazy.
Yeah, I got you. Oh, okay. Right. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
There you go.
Right.
Awesome. Oh, okay. Well, you know, I want to talk about Dr. Strangelove a little bit. When that character wheeled himself out, I thought, okay, this is thick. I mean, he's going for it here. He's going to let her rip, right? That whole character spoke to me because here's a guy who's obviously he's a defector from the Nazi defector to the United
World
States.
World War II days. Yeah.
But did that fix him? No. What was in his heart, he couldn't contain it. He had to fight it back through his gimpy little hand. That, to me, became a character, and he's at war with himself completely.
Yeah.
And at the end, I can walk mein Führer, you know? he kept calling the president, you know, mein Führer. Sure, yeah. And all of that I thought was really well placed because what it's saying to me anyways is that you can't, you know, there's no boundaries for this. You know, you can't hide from this. This is always going to be coming at you. How are you going to deal with this?
Yeah. That, yeah, but that was the worst kind of stereotype though, too.
No.
No.
Who
cares? You know.
What do you mean stereotypes? Let him go with this here. What
no,
do you
mean? Nazi?
You take the Nazi and it's like. You know, you take somebody who's immediately at least perceived stereotypically to be evil because culturally we have accepted the Nazi as evil.
As opposed to those nice Nazis?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
No, I'm saying, one of these so nice when this, Nazis. When this guy starts to say that world destruction is okay, you don't hate him for saying that because you've immediately accepted that his moral judgment is suspect.
Well, I'm looking at it from the comical angle
I think
angle
I see
here.
Your point. I think his point is you had to have that character say these things because you're right. Not going to go like, oh, well, this guy wouldn't say it. This guy wouldn't say it. This guy wouldn't
this
say
American
it. But a Nazi?
This American.
Of course that's what he would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, but he was a Nazi, but he was also in the American war room as an American defector.
He also still had the German mentality because he kept saying mine, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that kept leaking out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is he Albert
well, whatever it was funny to me. Whatever it was, I'm watching this guy. I'm watching this guy with his black glove on acting like, what on earth is this chump up to? And for me, when he gets up out of that chair and he does his Nazi salute, I can walk.
You can what?
I can walk.
Good. I'm glad you cleared that
listen,
up.
Listen. Out of all three of those performances, that one could
have. He said walk.
He did. Don't know. Like
what was Sellers'
funny,
best?
Funny to me.
Out of the three that Sellers did, what was the best one?
Oh, without a doubt, the president.
Mandrake.
I say the president.
I'm going to go with the president because it's so far removed from what Sellers was. He's playing this Midwestern guy. You can almost hear the Ohio coming out of his voice. And just that kind of rudimentary, basic politician polish to him.
Yeah.
Hoodie, you queued this film up, so let me give you the last word. What do you want to leave with? What do you think it's about, man?
Oh, that's it. Like we said, the strange love that we have with war and power, like James said. I think that's what the whole thing's about. So that's the thing that I didn't see. Go figure.
Yeah, well,
even though it's thick, it is so thick, yeah. And I am so thick.
You know what I think really did it for me was the performances. I just loved the performances here. Could you see this being a Coen Brothers film, Max?
I could see him doing something like this. I can't. Kubrick wasn't exactly known for comedy.
No.
No.
I mean, how many comedies did he make? Three?
This one?
No, he made Lolita.
Is that a comedy?
Peter Sellers performance.
God, Lolita is a super awesome comedy. It's one of my favorite Kubrick movies ever. But yeah, for a guy that's not really known as a guy that does comedies, the few he did came off pretty well, except I think, what was that one with Ryan O'Neal or whoever was
Love
it?
Story.
No, that wasn't Kubrick movie. It wasn't a Clockwork Orange either, so don't say that. But yeah, I it would be hard for me to see somebody else doing something like this. It would have to be somebody that really specializes in satire. Mm-hmm. And something like that.
Well, I say we wrap it up, man. Let's get into our top three. This was the film 1964 queued up by Commander Saint Hoodie, patron saint of quality outerwear. All right, so let's get into this. Our top three most memorable movie presidents. The presidents you'd most likely vote for.
Oh, I didn't
the
go
presidents,
there.
The presidents you'd most likely want to impeach. How's that sound? That would have been better. Likely. The top three presidents you'd like to impeach in films.
Yeah.
All right, now this is our top three movie presidents, and this is brought to you by our sponsor, Audible.com. hey, check this out. You know, if you go to our website, Max, you know this. Hoodie, you know this too.
Yeah, he does.
It's a website. Yeah,
you go to our website, thecufilmcast.net, in the right hand corner, you're going to see a link to audible.com. You go there. 150,000 titles to choose from, any genre, any way you want it. You go to thecufilmcast.net, and through our site, you're going to get a free 30-day trial. Free trial. It's free. Come on. What do you got to lose?
Nothing.
No kidding. And you get a free audiobook download of your choice, anything you want. That is our sponsor this week, as it always has been for a while now.
For several weeks.
Several weeks. Audible.com. Recommend that. And that's who our top three is sponsored by. QFilmcast.net, right-hand corner. I vote that you do that.
Do it now.
Do it now.
Without hesitation.
And without hesitation, let's get into our top three, and let's go to the patron saint. He's going to lead it off. Top three movie presidents. Where are you going?
I hate that I have to lead it off because it's not a good one. Yeah. And it's an ex-president, so Gene Hackman, welcome to Mooseport.
Ooh.
I like that guy.
Not a bad one.
I'm going to blow your mind a little bit.
Oh, good.
I'm going to blow your mind. Gene Ooh. President. You say Gene President.
Yeah, Gene President.
I love that
Gene
guy.
Gene President. Gene Hackman, welcome to Mooseport. I didn't think about that. Let's go over to James Hard Sub Savage, number three. What?
I decided to go with kind of ridiculous president, so I'm going to go with Tiny Lister as President Lindbergh in The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is totally ridiculous.
He looked like Ving Rhames, actually. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
I would follow him. He looked like a leader.
No, like he didn't.
Tiny Lister.
He did. He looked like a strong leader to me.
That's because he had the one eye.
Yeah.
Come on, sorry.
What about you? What about you there, producer? Well, you're going to put out some Godzilla stuff on me. What is it, number three?
Baby Godzilla.
I'm going to go with another dual actor, Jack Nicholson, Mars Attacks.
Yep. All I was thinking the same thing. Yep. Good answer.
Mars Attacks has made your list like four times.
It's his go-to film.
Baby Godzilla.
What was the president's name?
Wow.
I can't remember. Jack Nicholson.
James Dale.
There you go. It's on all of our lists.
James Dale.
Max Gumbo Johnson. I vote that you give me your number three. What is it?
Thomas Tug Benson from Hot Shots Part Deux.
Lloyd Bridges.
By Lloyd Bridges.
I can't remember that.
Anything by Lloyd Bridges.
What do you mean by sabotage?
And I didn't go for the greatest movie presidents or the most memorable. I went with the most incompetent, least.
Okay.
I got Tiny Lister over here.
Well, hey, he was more competent than Tug Benson. I'll give you got to give him that.
So your theme is these are presidents you would not want to see as president.
Oh, for God's sakes, no.
I'm going to go with that theme, too. Because
the first one to die loses.
I'm going to go with that theme, too, because my number three is Tim Robbins in The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Oh, yeah. Same thing, yeah.
Adam, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Hit underneath the table the whole time? Yeah.
And he didn't have a name. He was just the president.
He was just the president, yeah. He had those big wide eyes bugged out like, God, please, I don't want this job. Your job is give me your number two there, Hoodie. What is it?
Mine's Lloyd Bridges. Yeah, that's my number two.
Awesome. Simpatico.
There you go.
Lloyd Bridges and what?
Hot Shots Part Two.
Hot Shots Part Two.
Just checking. Just checking. You can't leave me with Lloyd Bridges.
Oh, my bad.
Now, I never want to be left alone with Lloyd Bridges. You know what happens.
Well, he's dead.
Puts a handkerchief through his head.
Yeah.
Maybe the dude would show up. That would be awesome.
Well, that's just like your opinion too, man. Savage, number two, what is it?
Harry Shearer, who played President Arnold Schwarzenegger.
In what film?
In the Simpsons movie.
Okay. I didn't know this. You knew that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
President Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is ridiculous.
Which for a while there didn't seem so ridiculous.
No.
Until he started squeezing out babies with the help.
No,
you know,
never happened.
And at them.
Number two.
Up and at them.
Up and at them, the bomb.
I was elected to lead, not to read.
Well, it's kind of embarrassing. It's like wearing the same outfit to the same dress to the same
party.
Day.
Get it straight,
Lloyd Bridges.
There you go.
Wow.
Three dresses.
All right. Wow, I didn't consider that.
People love Lloyd Bridges.
Are we at number one?
My number two.
Oh, what's your number two?
You got to do your number two.
Oh, my number two is one that I bet nobody's got. Max Frost from Wild in the Streets.
Didn't know it.
Nope.
Not a very well-known film, but it's about a guy that poisons the water supply in Washington, D.C. with LSD and then forces Congress to lower the voting age to 14.
That sounds amazing.
And gets elected president.
Sounds like Arkansas.
Is that a satire as well?
It is a bit of a satire. Did you figure that out yourself?
I am thick. We've established I'm pretty thick.
Did you catch on there? Yeah, it's a super satire.
President Max, is that what it was?
Max Frost.
I would follow anybody named Max.
Oh. And that's a moment, people.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
It's a Maalox moment, unfortunately.
Hey, number two, Maestro. Number two, Maestro.
My number two, why not Donald Pleasance from Escape from New York? He was a beat-up president. He was a surviving president.
There you go.
He was a trying-to-stay-alive president.
He was a coward.
So what?
He wasn't a coward. He was trying to stay alive.
I thought he was kind of pimping that. He was like, he was bucking up, man.
All right. Number ones.
Number ones. We're going over to the hoodie.
What's his face? Cruz in Idiocracy.
There you go.
What's his name?
Camacho.
Terry Cruz.
I will tell you. I will tell you. It's President Camacho Duane Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho.
That's the one.
From Idiocracy. Terry Cruz. That is my number one as well, sir.
Well played, sir.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's my not my number one. I'll get to mine in a second. But let's go over to the greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast, Adam Rogers.
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Don't know what the hell even that is. What is that?
Guide to the Galaxy.
He is the, he's president of the galaxy.
Okay.
Now ex-president of the galaxy.
Listen, if he's president, we didn't specify the United States.
We kind of did.
Yeah, we kind of did.
No,
okay.
No, nothing I got. Said,
yeah, nobody's president. Like, you I knew there's no president of Canada. Like
my wife is president of my house. I didn't want to. Yeah, Max, what do you got for number one?
Dwayne Camacho. Idiocracy. He gets the number one vote.
I just went with this because I thought no one else would say it, and I wanted to have my own thing with it, man.
Dwayne Camacho.
I'm going with Gene Hackman, but a different Gene Hackman.
Oh, okay.
Going Gene Hackman, absolute power.
That's you went a different good. Way than everybody else.
You know why? Because he's a sleazy, sleazy, nasty, funky president. He's one that like murders people and like kills people and covers it up and stuff.
Right.
So, in other words, he's kind of like a
Clint Eastwood like figures it
normal
out.
Normal president,
like
on
a very
Tuesday.
Qualified president. Wasn't that dark?
Clint Eastwood always wins when it's a fight between Clint Eastwood and Gene Hackman.
I like when he started preaching TV, and you're not going to get away from it, and I'm going to stop you. Growly old man. But that's Gene Hackman, absolute power. All right, let me get into a little bit of what we threw out on Twitter. I had a little bit of kickback on this thing.
Sure.
Check this out. Dalton Brown at Cakeless Roses, Charlie Sheen and Machete Kills.
It's good.
Yeah. What about Kelly O'Neill? You know, our spokeslady, our spokesgirl. She says Chris Rock as whatever his name is and head of state. Head of state. Did you see it?
Missed it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Didn't see it.
Well, she likes him, okay? And at Wilt's movie fan, Michael Douglas, the American president. Yeah.
Sure.
Harrison Ford, get off my plane. Morgan Freeman, Deep Impact.
Yeah.
Check this out. Bobby H. at Kid_Minneapolis says Kevin Kline is and Dave is my number one.
Yeah. I actually like that movie.
Yeah.
JD.
Oh, JD.
Every time.
Every single time. Well, there's J's in there.
Yeah.
JD stepped up. He piped in. He said Morgan Freeman is always the right answer, but John Voight and Pearl Harbor is so underrated.
But yeah. JT didn't just like that know whole nothing movie. About us.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor was such a classic.
I know. It was so good. That was a decent performance, though. But I wanted to stay away from actual presidents. I wanted them to be fictional.
Yeah.
I want a fictional president.
Fair enough.
I want a fake president. Like the one we have now.
What do you say? You want to wrap it up, guys?
Yep. Wrap it up.
Yeah, I think we're at the end of our term.
Do our bodily fluids hold?
I think they do. For me, they do.
God, let's hope they do.
Are you talking about the film? They do for me, that's for sure, man. I love Doctor Strange. I loved what it did for me. I loved how it made me look at film. I loved how it made me look at satire.
Yeah.
I literally danced around my house after I watched this stupid
film.
Such
a bleak movie. That's so crazy.
Yeah,
the world literally ended and Michael's dancing in his living room.
Like, you know, when that bomb's crashed into Earth, it went on just long enough to make you, I shouldn't be laughing here. You know?
Right.
And then the song kicks on.
That's a good satire. I'm sticking with 10. What are you going to do, Max?
I'm saying it at 8.
We're sticking with what we had, which is what?
34.
34 out of 50 bodily fluids. All right, there you go. That is the film, 1964, Doctor Strangelove. This brings us to our big reveal, and that is Adam the Bomb Rogers. Am I correct here? What you got, Adam? What you going to load up in the queue for next week?
I want to go bleak again. I want to go Monsters.
Okay.
This is the guy who directed the new Godzilla movie coming out.
Oh, all right.
That makes sense,
that's
though.
That's kind of nice, then.
Yeah. Let's do this. Let's
tie in.
Let's give the guy who's bringing...
You'll see why he was brought in to do Godzilla.
Let's give the guy who's bringing the big version of Godzilla, the big blockbuster,
some
credit here. Good on him. Let's see what that's about. Monsters. I have no idea. By the way, I have no idea anything about this film. It sounds terrifying, Monsters.
Am I the only one that's seen this?
I've never even heard of it.
I've never seen it.
I can only imagine. We'll get back to you, sir, okay? Hang tight. We'll see you next week with that one. And that is next week, Monsters, as queued up by our illustrious producer, Adam the Bomb Rogers. This was 1964 Doctor Strangelove and our top three movie presidents. As always, thank you for tuning into The Q. If you want to offer us your thoughts on the film we just discussed, you know where to go, QFilmcast.net. Leave us your comments. Always happy to hear from you. Until then, we'll see you next week. At the queue, Monsters. There you go. You were the girl that changed my world. You were a girl for me. You dropped the bomb on me, baby. You dropped the bomb on me. But you changed me, you dropped the bomb on me, baby. You dropped the bomb on me. I can walk!